Recently, you have been experiencing a range of health issues that have caused concern. You have started to suffer from bloating and abdominal pain, especially after eating certain foods or drinks, which has made it difficult for you to carry out daily activities. Along with this, you have also noticed a decline in energy levels and increased amount of brain fog, making it hard for you to focus on tasks at hand. Additionally, your joint pain has worsened, causing discomfort and a difficulty in movement. To make matters worse, your skin has become incredibly dry, which has further added to your concerns. Recently, you've noticed an itchy rash on your elbows and knees, which has caused you to worry even more. Given the severity of your symptoms, you decide to see a doctor. Hello and welcome to Anatomy of Illness. Today's episode is about celiac disease. Before we get into the condition itself, we are going to start with the history, so why we know celiac disease exists. Celiac disease is an ancient disease. There has been cases of it found in archaeological digs. The reason they know it was celiac disease is through gene studies on those they've dug up. The earliest known case of this being between 1 to 100 AD in Cosa, Italy. This is known because a dig in 2008 found a woman between the ages of 18 and 20 that had the gene for celiac disease. Her skeleton itself displayed features of failure to thrive and malnutrition. Now we move on to 101 to 200 AD, the first description of celiac disease. Aretaeus of Cappadocia, who was a Greek physician and medical writer, gives us the first clinical description of celiac disease. He refers to it as a celiac affection, naming the disease coeliacus, which comes from the Greek word for abdomen, describing it as, if the stomach be irritative of the food, and if it pass through undigested and crude, and nothing ascends into the body, we shall call persons celiacus. Jumping forward to the 1600s. Here we meet the philosopher Blaise Pascal, who some believe had celiac disease, as he had suffered from abdominal pain from childhood and throughout adulthood, and also experienced neurological issues related to celiac disease, which were depression and migraines. Leaving behind our philosopher friend, we also have one more person to discuss in the 1600s. This being Dutch physician Vincent Ketteler, who in 1669 was believed to be the first to describe the first adverse symptom caused by celiac disease. This is a potential description as we do not have DNA samples from the people he described having the symptoms, nor were we there to observe. He described a severe diarrheal condition in which the amounts of fecal matter produced was so much that several basins or pots scarcely hold the accumulations. His words, not mine. Now we move on to the 1800s. British physician and pathologist Matthew Bailey describes a chronic gastrointestinal condition that responded to a rice-heavy diet. He noted that those who suffered from the disorder suffered from chronic diarrhea and malnutrition. He wrote that he observed some patients have appeared to derive considerable advantage from living almost entirely upon rice. This is because the rice-heavy diet would have been gluten-free or very low in gluten. In 1887, Samuel Gee, an English doctor, presented a lecture on the modern definition of celiac disease at the Hospital for Sick Children in London. He wrote the first modern medical description of celiac disease. He believed that the disease needed to be treated through food, stating that if a person were to be cured, it would be through their diet. G tried multiple diets with his patients, even a diet of Dutch mussels. Yes, the shellfish. The children that were fed this diet only ate Dutch mussels 3 times a day and water. No other food was allowed. They ate this way for 8 months. After the shellfish season was over, they resumed their normal diets and started to get sick again. They were wasting away. Weight loss, diarrhea, and malnutrition. After 3 months, G tried to put them back on the Dutch mussel diet, but the children refused. I don't blame them. This was understandable, considering eating the same food every day for 8 months isn't something I would enjoy either. Although Dr. G worked diligently to try and identify the food triggering celiac disease, he was unable to identify it. In 1924, a new diet comes onto the scene. So a little bit of perspective. Before this diet, around 30% of children with celiac disease died. This diet was by the American pediatrician Sidney Haas. This was his banana diet. In this diet, children were allowed obviously several bananas a day, milk, cottage cheese, meat, and vegetables. That was it. It was described as a high banana, low starch diet. This diet was even endorsed by the University of Maryland in the 1930s. The banana diet was not purposefully gluten-free, however, it did help. At this time, parents were instructed to drop their children off at the hospital for 6 months, and if they were doing well on the diet, they were able to pick them up and take them home. The diet being gluten-free and calorie-dense would allow the children's villi to heal, often saving the lives of these children. The villi are these little finger-like projections that line the entire small intestine. The villi absorb nutrients from the food and pass them into the bloodstream. However, when returned to the parents would switch them back to their normal diet, mistaking them for cured. This would lead to significant harm and several severe side effects. This diet was used up until the 1950s in some children to treat celiac disease. In the 1940s, during World War II, there was a Dutch famine. Bread became unavailable throughout the Netherlands. During this famine, Dutch pediatrician Willem Karel Dick noticed that in his hospital during the time, the mortality rate for celiac disease was zero. So, Dr. Dick came up with the hypothesis that the culprit was a wheat protein. This led him to develop a wheat-free diet. This theory was further built upon in 1952. This was when a British medical team published their findings about the effects of wheat flour and rye flour on people with celiac disease. They found that removing these flours from their diets led to a significant improvement in their condition. This study led to the identification of gluten in barley, rye, and wheat being the primary trigger for celiac disease. In 1956, Margot Scheiner, a German-British gastroenterologist and medical researcher, develops the jejunal biopsy instrument. This is a new technique for intestinal biopsy. If you remember back to episode 4, the jejunum is the middle part of the small intestine. This procedure allowed for a better diagnosis of celiac disease and other gastrointestinal disorders. This also assisted in creating modern pediatric gastroenterology. Now in the 1970s, genetic markers are identified and linked with celiac disease and dermatitis herpetiformis. This is also known as Turing's disease. This is a skin manifestation of celiac disease. At this time, it was associated with the HLA-DQ2 gene. In the 1980s, a connection was made between celiac disease and various autoimmune diseases, such as type 1 diabetes. By the early 1990s, celiac disease becomes accepted as an autoimmune disease and is linked with both HLA-DQ2 and HLA-DQ8. In 1997, the role of tissue transglutaminase is discovered. This enzyme is thought to serve two purposes. The first being is that it increases the immunostimulatory response of gluten, so it increases the immune response. And the second being, it is a target autoantigen. An autoantigen is a protein in your body that the immune system recognizes and attacks if you have a specific autoimmune condition. In 2006, the first clinical trial for a medication to help those with celiac disease occurred. The drug lorazepam acetate made it to the third phase of clinical trials in 2022. But however, due to the sheer size of participants it would need in this phase, it was discontinued. This demonstrates that there is a possibility of medication in the future to treat celiac disease. So, what is the cause of celiac disease and what are the demographics? Celiac disease occurs in about 1 in every 133 Americans, or in Australia, about 1 in every 70. Around 50% of people in Australia are born with a genetic predisposition to develop celiac disease. However, only about 1 in 40 will actually develop the condition. In Europe, about one-third of babies have a predisposition to celiac disease. The genetic predisposition is caused by a mutation in the HLA-DQ genes, specifically the variants called HLA-DQ2 and HLA-DQ8. HLA-DQ stands for human leukocyte antigen DQ. Celiac disease is also associated with several conditions, such as type 1 diabetes, Down syndrome, or Turner syndrome. Turner syndrome is when a female is born with only one X chromosome rather than two. Having a first-degree relative with celiac disease also increases the risk of developing it. What part of gluten do you actually react to? The reaction to gluten is caused by the prolamin fraction. Different grains have different prolamin fractions. This is gliadin in wheat, sequilin in rye, hordeon in barley, and avenin in oats. So, how do we test for celiac disease? We use blood tests to test for specific antibody levels. So this would be for IgA levels. This is immunoglobulin A. There will also be blood tests for vitamin and mineral deficiencies, such as iron, ferritin, zinc, calcium, folate, and B12. A full blood count, liver function testing, and thyroid function testing will also be done. This is to get a better picture of what may be going on. Biopsies will also be done. This includes a small intestine biopsy through a colonoscopy. This is to confirm damage to the small intestine and celiac disease. This biopsy looks for villus atrophy, so instead of having the normal finger-like projections covering the surface, making it look bumpy, the small intestine looks flat or flattened histologically. And a skin biopsy may also be taken. This is in cases where there is dermatitis herpetiformis present. This is normally the skin that is adjacent to the lesion or rash, but not specifically the rash itself, as this normally gives better diagnostic accuracy. Genetic testing may also be done to look for the genes. We'll get right back into symptoms and presentation right after this little break. What would you experience if you had celiac disease? So what are the symptoms? There are over 300 symptoms of celiac disease. Some are more common than others. Yes, 300. These can include pale mouth ulcers, headaches, irritability, diarrhea or constipation, nausea and vomiting, abdominal pain and bloating, joint pain, infertility. Yes, celiac disease can cause you to have unexplained infertility and miscarriages. Extreme tiredness, brain fog. This is confusion, forgetfulness, a lack of clarity, and an inability to focus. Tingling and numbness. This is because you're unable to absorb the nutrients because your intestines are damaged. Dental issues like thin enamel or discolored teeth. And dry skin. These are some of the more common symptoms that you would see, but there are many, many others that you wouldn't even think of. What would you observe as a doctor? So patients will often present with anemia. So this is a lower than normal red blood cell count or hemoglobin count. They'll also have migraines, fatigue. They can have osteopenia, which is thinner bones or low bone mass. Osteomalacia, which is softer bones. There is also a risk of osteoporosis, especially early onset osteoporosis, which is a disease causing the bones to become weak and brittle, leaving them prone to breaks. It's always concerning because this leaves them at risk for things like hip breaks, which can leave them more at risk for death. Poor weight gain or weight loss, diarrhea and constipation, nausea and vomiting, arthralgia, which is joint pain, delayed growth in children, aphthous ulcers, so this is the white little ulcers inside the mouth, fatty liver, pericarditis, and cardiomyopathy. Yes, celiac disease can affect the heart. A dermatitis piriformis rash. This only occurs in about 10% of patients. Most common in adult men of Northern European descent, especially Swedish or Irish descent. This rash may initially present as digital petechiae, so on the fingers. It appears symmetrically on the buttocks, elbows, knees, scalp, and shoulders most commonly. It is characterized by extremely itchy vesicles. So these are blisters on erythema skin, reddened skin. Less than 20% of people with this present with the classic symptoms, so the abdominal symptoms. However, 90% of people with dermatitis herpetiformis will have some form of intestinal involvement but will have mild symptoms. This makes them harder to diagnose because most people will think a rash is a rash. What are some rare complications of celiac disease? So some rare complications of celiac disease, normally these occur in undiagnosed or in the first few years after starting a gluten-free diet. These include mucosa-associated lymphoid tissue lymphoma or MALT lymphoma. This is a non-Hodgkin lymphoma. MALT lymphoma is a slow-growing cancer of the lymphatic system, specifically in the B lymphocytes, which are a type of red blood cell. This occurs when they become abnormal and grow in an uncontrolled manner. This is especially dangerous. So, how do we treat it? In most cases, it is just a lifelong change of diet to remove all sources of gluten, including potential cross-contaminations. However, in more severe cases where there is a lot of damage to the intestine or in cases of refractory celiac disease, medications may be used. In cases where there's severe damage, it's normally at the start and then they'll wean you off. So refractory celiac disease is a type of celiac disease where the intestine doesn't heal. This can be quite serious. Medications that can be used to help with the symptoms in celiac disease are steroids like budesonide to suppress intestinal inflammation. Immunosuppressants like azathioprine are used to reduce the activity of the body's immune system to stop further damage. And if you have dermatitis herpetiformis, dapsone may be used. This is an antibiotic that slows or stops the growth of bacteria and also decreases inflammation. Where would I see this in the media? There are some famous people with celiac disease. These include Emmy Rossum, an actress you may know from Shameless. She has celiac disease, stating hers is more mild. This is probably because she is known from a younger age. If you want to check out someone on social media, there is College Celiac KC on Instagram. She has a lot of great resources about gluten-free products in the US and a lot of helpful information. Her social media will be the first link in the description after our website. If you'd like to check out a book, there is Celiac and the Beast, a love story between a gluten-free girl, her genes, and her digestive tract by Erica Dermer. This shares the story of one woman's journey through her diagnosis and to regaining her health. The second link after our website has some book suggestions, including a few cookbooks for those of you wanting to learn how to cook gluten-free. If you wanted to check out a TV episode, you could watch House MD Season 2, Episode 22, Forever. This isn't the most accurate depiction of celiac disease, as the character does have some other conditions. However, it does bring awareness to some of the complications that undiagnosed celiac disease can cause. There is also New Amsterdam Season 4, Episode 18, If, Ends, or Buts. As part of this side storyline, there is a patient who is having symptoms that they eventually diagnose as celiac. If you're wanting to check out some foundations, a foundation for those in the US is the Celiac Disease Foundation. They have some great information and resources. If you want to check them out, they're the third link below our website in the description. There is also Beyond Celiac, another great resource. They have many great recipes for those new to celiac disease. This will be the fourth link below our website. There is also Celiac Australia, which has helpful information about celiac disease and how it differs from gluten intolerance. This is the fifth link below our website. Another great social media account to follow is The Very Hungry Celiac on Instagram. She was on MasterChef Australia in 2022 and has many great recipes. Her Instagram will be the sixth link below our website. A special little announcement, we have just opened a Discord server, so if you want to contact us on there or check that out, that is open and will be linked in our website. If you want to check out the sources, social media links, or any other links, you can head to anatomyofillness.com. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to hear more, subscribe to be notified about our latest episodes. If you have any ideas for upcoming episodes or any questions, you can contact us on Instagram or Discord. Otherwise, stick around for the next episode. What do you get when you boil a funny bone? A laughing stock.